Okay, before I start the show, we've got to go through, you know, the usual security questions. What is your pet's first name? Your favorite pet, I'm sorry. What's your favorite pet's first name? Type that in. Good, good. Now the number's 1, 2, 3 after it, obviously. Everybody chooses that. Go on. Fine, fine. And of course, when you change your password, it's your favorite pet's name and then 234. We all know that. We know how that works. All right. What city were you born in? What town or city were you born in? Please enter now. And the last four numbers of your social security number. Okay. And now all the rest of the digits that come before that. Enter that, please. Okay. Please enter your credit card number. And the expiration date. And those crazy little numbers that are found next to the credit card number. They're like the three or four numbers. Those crazy little numbers are a lot smaller. Type those in now, please. Very good. Sign this piece of paper that says that you're not responsible for anything that I do and I'm not responsible for anything in your life whatsoever. Sign that, please. Very, very good. And now sign this piece of paper that says, at will, I can repossess your car. That's all. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. Just sign it and shut up. Sign it. Sign it. Sign it. Okay. Very, very nice. Very nice. Okay, now we can start the show.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Or you can just give me your Facebook password.
Whatever.
That'll do it. Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you. I am the host. I am the host. I am the host. I'm that little wafer that they shove in your mouth in church. That's me. That's me. That's what I look like. Hey, welcome to the little wafer they shove in your mouth. Very, very sensitive, Ron. Very sensitive. I have never been sensitive toward that subject matter. I respect every religious person in the world. I have too many questions. I just have too many questions. That's all. At the beginning of the program, I wouldn't even do this program until I asked you all those security questions. Man, I'm thinking, you know, I haven't been on Facebook now for 23 years, and I'm avoiding it because I'm mad at them. I want to teach them a lesson that you can't fool around with personal information and give it away when people didn't think there would be. I watched a piece on 60 Minutes last night about Facebook, and this is a big security default, and man, it pissed me off. It made me very upset that all this information that I go back and forth with friends, that apparently if someone wants my friend's information, then it's implied that I gave them permission to get it from them. Selling information is like one of the biggest businesses. It's not pens and pencils. It's selling information. Wow. That's like me meeting somebody on the street. Hi, my name is Ron. My name is Bob. Okay, hold on, Bob. His name is Bob. 23 cents. 23 cents. His name is Bob. You know, stop selling people's information. I mean, I'm not really into privacy. But at the same time, I don't want people selling my privacy. That's wrong. So I'm very upset with Facebook. And every time I see Mark Zuckerberg, who I'm pretty sure is not an Episcopalian, it pisses me off. Mark Zuckerberg is, I think, 12 years old. I'm not sure. Maybe 13 if I'm going to give him a little pass. But I think he's 12. He dresses like he's 12. He dresses like he's about to go out in the schoolyard and play dodgeball. He dresses like a child. And when he dresses in a suit, it's like a kid putting a suit on for his bar mitzvah. It just bothers me. This gigantic company, Facebook, that handles the security of everything, that could have altered the last election and sells information so that you can be marketed and hounded. This little 12-year-old kid is behind that. And he said he was sorry. He says he could have done better. He's very sorry. Hey, this isn't a time out in the corner of the room, my friend. You own a huge, gigantic company. As a matter of fact, the company's bigger than Zuckerberg is. I don't think Zuckerberg can control his own company anymore. It's like grown into its own entity. It's like some amoeba that's taken over the planet. One of those movies. I'm considering begging out. You know, I don't, you know, let me weigh the two things, my respect and dignity, and on the other hand, friends. I give the friends up in a moment. This way. And they're not even friends. You know, they're, we've been through this before. These Facebook friends are not your friends. It's some guy named Pedro from Guatemala. You know that. You know that for a fact. It's the only reason you're friends with him is because he liked you when you posted a picture of your meatballs in an Italian restaurant that you visited last week because you had nothing else to do and you took your camera out and you took a picture of your meatballs. I mean, what a low point in your life that must have been. Or it's your birthday. Hey, I got like 500 birthday greetings. Oh, that's so fantastic. That's really wonderful. How much did you get in gifts? Nothing. Nobody sent me a damn thing. But you have 500 friends. Yeah, I can't figure it out. It's because they're not your friends. They've taken the word. They've bastardized it. Friends equals somebody I may have heard of at some point in my life, but not even. That's the definition of friend. I would take a bullet for him. Not really. I don't even know what he looks like. I don't think I'd take a bullet. I wouldn't even draw a picture of a bullet for him. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. Zuckerberg bothers me. He's a kid. You know, we got the world is in the hands of incapable people. Every single situation is in the hands of incapable children. Zuckerberg, biggest company on the planet. A child. Donald Trump, able to leap tall buildings that he's already built with a single bound, dealing with nuclear things and nuclear deals and countries that want to destroy us and interpretations of our basic constitution, which this man has not read. Well, the only thing he read was, I think in first grade, The Cat in the Hat. I think that was read to him even. He wrote The Art of the Deal. I don't believe he wrote that book. I believe he just sat there and somebody wrote it for him. I think that'll come out someday after he's dead. But my God, the world is in this man's hands? Seriously? I don't think it makes anybody comfortable at all. This is in the hands of another schoolyard bully child. Children have taken over the planet. It's children of the corn. That's what I'm living. Children of the corn. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Anyway, I'm sorry if I'm being outlandish. So early. All right. You've expressed yourself. I was thinking of Zuckerberg, which is obviously a Jewish name. I don't think anybody would doubt me on that one. I've got a funny story for you.
Okay, get comfortable, everybody. It's time for one of Ron's funny stories.
All right, here's a funny story. Make yourself comfortable. Get a drink. You're going to need one. I think I'm Jewish, which is fine. You know, I think you're Catholic. Whatever, you know, doesn't matter. My father was brought up Jewish. My mother was not. I'm not sure my mother was Jewish at all because she never said she was and she never said she wasn't. But she didn't really seem to participate in the reindeer games, if you know what I mean. My father was very into it. He would go to a temple or synagogue. They have two words for this place. He would go every week, and he would try to drag the family, and the family would say, no, there's cartoons on TV. I don't want to go. And we wouldn't. So he would go himself, and he would go. He was a member of the nearby neighborhood temple, and I'll never forget this, and this is the crux of the funny story, which is no different. I'm not picking on any religion. All religions have their, wait a minute, I don't understand moments for me. My father paid membership fees to the temple. The membership fees came with benefits. You got four tickets to the high holy days, which were Passover, Hanukkah, and other holidays that I have no idea what they were. either I never knew or I blocked it out of my mind because of some kind of trauma. I really don't remember which, but I just know two of them. In the mail, they would send you four tickets, like you were going to the theater. It's like it was a Broadway play or something. So on these high holy days, you would have four tickets so you could take the family, and you could ask for extra tickets. I think they cost more money. But that came with the membership. And I remember saying to myself, wait a minute. I was probably only like 7 years old or something. I remember saying to myself, wait a minute, this is odd. This is, my father is paying membership fees to his quote unquote church temple. This is like he belongs to a country club. It just didn't make sense to me. Shouldn't religious gatherings be not cost worthy? I mean, if you don't have any money, should you have to pay to go to a house of worship? No, I don't think so. In my heart, I was saying no. But here was my father getting membership fees, and I thought, oh, this is, just feels wrong. It feels wrong. And my mother and I and my brother, we weren't religious at all. We just watched everything, you know. We just observed and kept our mouths shut, you know. Just, but my father was into this. He was still what we call Jewish light, which was Reform Judaism, which means I'm a Jew, but I've still got to mow the lawn and I'm going to go play poker. I mean, that's what that means, I think. So anyway, here's the day that I remember. He's opening up the mail. He's getting home from work and he's opening up the mail, and he goes, oh my God, these people are killing me. And my mother, walks over to him and says, what's going on? And he says, it's another letter from the temple. They say we're past due on the membership fees for the temple, and now they're charging me a late fee. She said, why do you go? Why do you bother with them? He says, I don't know. And he's frustrated. They charged him a late fee. Now, listen to me. I don't know if that goes on all over the place. I was brought up in New Jersey. I don't know if it's different in New Jersey, but apparently when you don't pay your membership dues to the temple, you're charged a late fee. And I guess the real punishment is you may not get your tickets. Well, I'm going to miss the show. It's just horrible. It was funny to me which is, I think, why I became a writer and comedian, because things like that at a very early age were very curious and funny to me. Not to him. He got a little pissed off. I think at one point he was probably considering leaving the religion and going to Buddhism. I really don't know what his plans were, but he was pissed about that. And then I thought, well, what do they do in other religions? And I was a wedding videographer for decades on the side. I did a lot of things on the side. Sometimes I had a salad on the side. And I've been to every church, mosque, temple, you name it, every denomination, $5, $10, whatever. I've been to every one of them. And I don't understand what's going on. I respect the fact that people have religions, but I never understood the group thing. I thought that, like, religion and spirituality was like, between yourself and your spirit, your God, whatever, that it was a one-on-one thing, and then it wasn't necessary to sit in a large room with everybody in order to make that connection. I did not know that. I still don't. But whatever, I respect everything. I respect everything. I really do. I really do. But I remember going to a church service where they passed a basket around, and oddly enough, there were no cookies in it. I thought that's what that was. But you donate what you wish, what you can. They suggest a percentage of your salary or whatever the case may be. And I thought, well, that's okay. If you can afford to do it, you do it. If you can't afford to do it, you don't do it. But they don't lock you out of the house of worship because you didn't pay your dues. Now, I don't think it's like that anymore. I haven't been in a synagogue for quite a period of time. I don't know how it works. But in New Jersey, in this particular town, which was Teaneck, New Jersey, that's how that worked, and it was. I to this day I think back at it as I do right now, and I'm just as many things in life. This one floors me as well, and I don't know. It's just an oddity of life. Yeah. That's my funny story.
That was a really funny story, Ron. But then again, I'm in the third grade.
Whenever I do a little bit of religious humor, I always have to throw in the... And I do this voluntarily. I throw in the little cavat that, you know, it's a comedy show, get over it. Okay, fine, let's move on.
Gentlemen, have you ever been in the mood for a nice knish or maybe bagel and a schmear, but you're also in the mood for some exotic dancing? You can't find those in the same place. Until now. I'm Moishe Kaufman, inviting you to come visit us at Moishe's Knish and Strippers, the area's first genuine kosher deli and titty bar. Come in and rock out with your locks out and check out our dancers. These girls are so nice, you'll plots, and they're all certified kosher. Maybe not the kind of girl you bring home to mother, but once you see Delia fold a dollar bill without using her hands, you won't care what mom thinks. Look, Bubby, you're in a strip club. That alone is enough to kill her, so live a little. Every Thursday, don't miss our buns and brisket buffet from noon to 6. Moishe's Knish and Strippers is closed on the Sabbath. Hey, we might be a little unorthodox, but we're not heathens. The one accent that I can do is a Jewish accent. I never learned to do the other ones. And it's fun. It's fun. It's fun to do. When I meet people from all religions and all walks of life, at my age, all we do is talk about our physical condition. That's it.
if you ask somebody how they're doing when you're younger, they will tell you how they're doing mentally. If you ask somebody how they're doing when you're older, they will tell you how they're doing physically. It's fascinating. Give it a try. It's like a party game. Walk up to a 21-year-old, 22-year-old and say, hey, Bob, how you doing? Bob will say, I'm very tired. I'm working very, very hard, but I'm doing all right. Things are really good at work, and the family's good. Thanks for asking. If you ask a guy that's over 50 years old how he's doing, he responds like this.
I'm all right, but when I bend over, it hurts, my back hurts. And I don't know, the headaches, they're not going away too well. I'm taking the medications. My doctor says this. He says, you got to slow down, but keep moving. How do I slow down and keep moving? Isn't that an oxymoron? My doctor's a moron, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you that right now. But I'm doing okay, thanks for asking. You know, the sciatica is getting into the arthritis, and they're not gelling very, very well, and my shoes don't fit for some reason. I don't know. My feet got bigger. I'm swell. I swell in the summer. In the summer, I swell up like a balloon. My shoes don't fit. I got to buy different shoes. I go to Walmart, $7.95 for a pair of shoes. I'm not talking about $795. I'm talking about $7.95. They're slippers. But they fit because my legs bloat and everything's going crazy, and I'm getting nosebleeds for no reason. All I got to do is just look up and my nose starts bleeding. I don't know what it is. I've got an appointment with my doctor, but I can't get one for another 17 weeks. They're so busy. Oh, yeah, I can't get in there. Always something with the doctor. I'm telling you that right now. My wife, she's nagging me to hell, and I don't need this. I got heart problems. You know what I mean? Get nagged too much. My heart goes crazy. It beats faster. I got to go to the doctor about that, too. Everything's going wrong. I can't see anything. I'm wearing goggles, not even glasses anymore. They're basically goggles. It's horrible. I can't do it anymore. Thanks for asking.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Does it make you nervous when I do a satirical show about religion? Does it make you? It shouldn't do that. Grow up. Get a job. Get out of the house. We gotta laugh at everything. Well, you should laugh at everything. Everything's really kind of funny when you look at it. Place that's the best is probably Best Buy. It's got the word best in it. So that makes sense, doesn't it? No? No. Whatever. All right, kids, it's time to talk to our guest for today. We're going to talk to the National Safety Council. My goodness, what wonderful people they are. Apparently, they've, you know, you got to stay safe on the roads. And technology in automobiles is incredible. If you sway out of your lane just a little bit, little alarms go off in your car, and it's like crazy, man. Deborah Hirschman joins us now. She's president and CEO of the National Safety Council, and we're talking about an effort to have zero roadway deaths by 2050. Well, you'll have to send me an email. I don't know if I'll be around then, but whatever. If you could step that up a little bit, I'd appreciate it. Anyway, this is the Road to Zero Coalition. What is the end game?
So the end game for the Road to Zero Coalition is to get to zero fatalities by 2050.
Yeah.
This might seem like a moonshot, but we know that we have been very successful. We're hearing a lot in the news about that fatality that occurred on Southwest earlier this week.
Yes.
That is the first fatality in aviation in 9 years.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people that didn't think we could get to zero when it came to aviation fatalities. We know that there's a lot more work that we can do, and we're trailing our international counterparts when it comes to safety on the road.
Now, road accidents and road fatalities are actually quite high. How high are they?
So, unfortunately, we're seeing record high numbers when it comes to fatalities on our public roads. We're almost at 40,000 fatalities this year and last year. That is significantly higher than our low point in 2009. And so our trend is not getting better, even though the cars that we're driving are safer, they last longer, they have more technology. We're seeing more fatalities and persistent fatalities in areas like alcohol-impaired driving.
Yeah.
30% of our roadway fatalities are attributed to alcohol impairment.
Yeah. Well, there's more people on the road than ever. Well, there's more people than ever, and there's more cars on the road than ever. So I guess that number does jump up. What about, are most of them caused on the highways, on local roads? Where do the percentages lie there?
Yeah, so, you know, some of the really interesting things are it does depend on where you live, mm-hmm. what your greatest risks are. In urban environments, one of the things that we've seen go up very quickly over the last few years is pedestrian fatalities.
Mm-hmm.
And so vulnerable road users like pedestrians, bicyclists and motorcyclists, we're seeing those fatalities go up at a faster clip than people being killed in vehicles. But if you live in a rural community, we see 19% of the nation's population lives in the rural environments, but almost 50% of our roadway deaths occur in rural environments. So different risks depending on where you live.
Deborah, I mean, I'm no expert, but I think texting has been like really bad for us.
Oh, my gosh. We hear that all the time when we talk about increasing the fatality numbers over the last few years. Everyone says it's got to be the distracted driving.
Yeah.
And we do know that people are using their devices. And when we see those pedestrian fatalities going up by 10% a year, we know that it's not just distracted drivers, but potentially distracted walkers as well. And so we all need to disconnect when we're dealing with things like driving. It's a safety-sensitive situation. Lives actually do depend on us paying attention. It might be rude at the dinner table not to pay attention, but on the road, it's deadly.
Yeah. It's amazing the problems we cause ourselves in humanity. It's, you know, we make things worse for ourselves sometimes, but we're trying to correct this here with what you're doing. Let me ask you about self-driving cars, if I may, because that's always in conversation, and there was actually a death in, somewhere down the West Coast because there was a miscalculation with a pedestrian. Is that part of the formula, the self-driving cars?
Technology is absolutely a piece of this. So we actually looked at three things that we think, and this is stakeholders from all across the country, government, private sector, safety groups, and we think there's three things that really are going to make this happen. The first is to double down on what works.
Mm-hmm.
That's the traditional things like wearing seat belts, not driving impaired, things that we know are important. The second piece is accelerating technology. And when it comes to accelerating technology, it's technology that's available today in vehicles, like automatic emergency braking, blind spot monitor, lane departure warning, up to and including autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we don't think we're going to see everyone having an autonomous vehicle for decades.
Right.
And then the third piece is really to design a safer system and create a safety culture. And so when we think about aviation, we expect 100% safety in mm-hmm. aviation. But we kill 100 people a day on our roadways in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So that expectation of safety, that bar needs to be raised. And so we need to create a safer environment. And whether it's things like roundabouts that we can design into the system mm-hmm. or prioritizing safety when it comes to passing laws or putting funding out there, we have got to make safety a priority.
Yeah. It's a long road. And I didn't mean that as a pun. It is. But I'm glad that there is a target, and I don't know how we achieve it. I guess through technology and through education and awareness, but that's been around forever, too. I think people are getting stupider, but that's just my opinion, and I think we have to make them smart. Where do we get more information?
So for more information, you can visit www.nsc.org or Road to Zero.
Wonderful. Thank you for doing this, because every once in a while, you need a little slap in the face to say, hey, wake up. And if someone doesn't slap you, it's not going to work. So thanks for the slapping.
Well, thanks. I don't want to slap anyone, but just to remind everyone, when they get in their car, that's one of the most dangerous things that you will do all yeah. day. And so recognizing there's a lot of risks out there on the roadway.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I sometimes work late at night, and when I'm driving home at 1 o'clock in the morning on these little divided local roads, I say to myself, split second, someone could swerve, I'm done. And I'm conscious of that every single time, and I think that's what we need to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a safe day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Great. Now I don't feel like I want to drive anymore. Like, it's too dangerous just to get in my car. Thanks a lot. Have yourselves a wonderful day. Join me again tomorrow for a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace. When it's hard to form words, it's probably time to stop for the day. I've reached that level. Change my password.